the drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and a work-at-home mom of two. I would love to devote more time to creative writing, journaling, and blogging.
And I'm Abigail Creeves, a writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm also a work-at-home mom who is just beginning to learn the ropes of balancing a baby and everything else.
And you are listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Welcome to episode 22 of the Chasing Creative Podcast. So we've all heard that we're supposed to be building an online audience, and that if you want success as a creative, you have to be popular on social media, you have to post regularly on your own blog and other people's blogs, and you have to maintain a growing email list, which is a lot of stuff to do. And even if we don't want traditional success, many of us are putting our work online to share our creativity, to connect with other people who might enjoy it and benefit from seeing it. But building all of those platforms takes a lot of time and energy away from the creative process, and it can make us discouraged because we're always comparing ourselves to others, or we're frustrated that we don't have time to do all the things that we're supposed to be doing online. So this week, we are talking about how we balance doing the work with building a platform. So before we get too far into this topic, I figured it would be good to define what it even means to have a platform. So how do you feel about that word, Abby?
Yeah, platform is a weird word because I feel like it didn't exist in terms of an online world even 5 years ago, maybe 10 years ago is a better guess. I don't know. We were talking earlier this evening before we hopped on about how, like, oh, 1998, that was only 10 years ago. Oh, wait, it was 20 years ago.
Yes.
So our minds are a little skewed when it comes to dates and things. So I feel like platform is, it started out at this as this really, like, revolutionary term that everyone's like, oh, a platform. It's kind of like, you know, building your own personal brand. And everything that we take for granted now about having a life online. But I feel like it got really icky for a while. And you and I have talked about this before. It was all about numbers, 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 numbers. And if you don't have 500,000 Twitter followers and 500,000 Facebook fans of your page, then you weren't doing enough and it didn't matter. And so I feel like now platform has kind of been swinging back a little bit into more of a focus on connection and relationships, which is what blogging used to be about. And that is much more fun. I don't know. Do you have opinions on the word platform?
Yeah, well, I agree. I feel like maybe 5 years ago, it was just starting to become a thing. And that's the word people were just starting to use surrounding it. We could be totally wrong about that, but 5 years really seems like a lot of things have changed. And I hear the word platform, and it makes me picture somebody standing on a stage. And that, to me, just feels kind of yucky because, like, not like there's anything wrong with being a public speaker or speaking at a conference or anything, but it just makes it easier for me to see it as a competition where you are standing on a stage and you're trying to make your stage taller than the next person's, and you're trying to make sure that more people are surrounding your stage than the person the next stage over. And if you're up on a stage and if you're literally, like, up on a platform, how well are you connecting with the audience? Like, you're spreading your message to a lot of people, but you're not getting to know anybody one-on-one. There's no two-way relationships being built there. And that, to me, is not great.
Yeah.
I would much rather think about community as the foundation for a platform, if that makes sense. So using social media as a place to find your community and to actually connect with and get to know people, rather than as a place to build a platform, even though in marketing speak, that is technically what you're doing, I guess.
Yeah. And it's hard to separate, like, doing creative work from building a platform, because if you do have any kind of designs on publishing a book or having a podcast that funds itself or makes money or anything in that realm, you know, making an independent film. It just seems that you have to focus on building your platform at least a little, if not a lot. And so it's really, really hard to think about it in not in terms of numbers and views. And I tend to, these days, I think of it more as a consistent place that I show up and share my story, whether that place is my blog or Instagram or Twitter, kind of in hopes that others see that and get the courage to kind of show up and share their story too, is kind of how I've made it not feel as icky these days.
Yeah, I really like that. And I just think there's this aspect of it that's also associated with fame, mm-hmm. almost, where like if you have enough followers, you're internet famous. And it's sort of like there's a difference between finding an audience for your product or for your work and your art and like just doing it for the people watching you. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? There's almost yeah. more of like a show-offy, like fame, internet celebrity vibe that some people have that I think can be really icky. And then there are some people with huge followings and they seem like they're all about the connection, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, so I think the numbers don't necessarily tell the whole story, but then they also, you have to take your platform and your followers and make it what feels right to you. So like if you look at Chip and Joanna Gaines from Magnolia, they obviously have a huge following now, but they still manage to make everything seem like they're really about connecting with people. They don't seem to be in it for the fame, at least not from my perspective. I'm sure there are people out there who disagree with me, but I think of them as really genuine people. And so I think it's sort of what you make of it. So I like that that's your place where you show up online.
You're going to laugh at this, but about probably a year and a half ago now, maybe, I was sitting in a meeting at my day job and people were talking about like, oh, did you see, did Chip and Joanna, da, da, da. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, Chip and Joanna. I was like, are these people? They're like, how have you not heard about this thing? And I was like, my television doesn't get channels, guys. So yes, I still don't awesome. Actually know what they do. I just know that they're people on the TV that make things pretty.
So the only reason I know about them is because, one, when we go on vacation to either Jacob's Cabin or my parents have a timeshare, we get cable there.
Nice.
And two, I guess I'm not sure if it's still on there or not, but for a while their show Fixer Upper was on Netflix.
Oh.
And so we watched it on Netflix, and that's sort of how we got introduced to them. And then, of course, you start following them online, and then they're everywhere. And now there's a paint line and a furniture line and a bakery, I think. Now they do everything. But
that's crazy. That's crazy. And so, yeah, they were talking about, like, oh, expanded. Did you go to the silos? And I was like, why would you go to a silo on vacation? Like, we have them in Wisconsin. And I get it now. I Googled it.
So. Yeah, they have quite a cult following. Yeah. So, I mean, that's definitely one example of platform for you that I think started out from just genuinely connecting with people and doing the best work that they could possibly mm-hmm. do. And a TV station happened to notice them and pick them up. And now they are literally like exploding. And I'm pretty sure they single-handedly drive the economy of Waco, Texas. So
probably.
There you go.
Well, that is one way to get famous and have your creativity funded. Don't we all wish that it would kind of work out that way a little bit, maybe with a little less stress involved? I don't want a network television show by any means.
Yes, maybe a little bit less fame and just more opportunities to explore all your various passions.
And more funding.
Yes, the funding.
Yeah.
Definitely an important piece of that puzzle. So how do we personally feel about building a platform for our creative work, since we obviously are not HGTV stars? How do we feel about this whole idea of being visible online and putting our work out there?
I think no matter what, it still feels a little, you know, look at me, like you mentioned earlier, standing on a stage and kind of like shouting into the abyss and hoping that people listen to you. And no matter how unsleazy we make it, it really is still promoting ourselves in some way, shape, or form. So some days I feel good about it, like, oh, I'm helping to share my story, and hopefully that helps other people share theirs too. And other days I'm like, what is the point? I'm just shouting into the void, and there is, why am I doing this? Is anyone listening? All of that kind of thing. Or what is the logical end to this? Is the logical end fame? And if so, do I actually really want that? Do I just think that it would be cool, like an HGTV show with funding? Like, that would be cool, but I don't know if I would want to deal with everything else that it entails.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think we all need to figure out for ourselves, mm-hmm. is like, what does a successful platform look like for us, and what does a successful platform do for us? Like,
yeah.
There are a lot of bloggers out there who have gotten traditionally published book deals because they have this platform and they've got an audience for it. But then so sometimes I'm like, well, that would be cool. And then other times I'm like, I would almost rather have to work for a book deal, like most authors do, because then I know that the work is worth it, because I've read enough books by bloggers that I don't think needed to be written, or that I think could have been better if they hadn't been rushed to market. It's just a tricky thing to figure out, like, where is all this going? Like you said, where is it leading? Mm-hmm. And do I really want what I think I want? Because so often something might seem nice in our heads, and then in reality, it isn't.
Yeah. Well, and not even what you think you want, but what you think you should want. Like, there's another layer in there, too. Like, isn't every blogger supposed to want a book deal? And maybe you are a blogger out there and you don't, and you feel maybe a little bad that you don't want it, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or there's that whole, like we've talked about before on here, that creative entrepreneur community and circle that is very big on, like, quit your day job and make your passion project your full-time job, or make your side hustle your full-time job. And it's like, you know what? If you want to make stationery and never make any money from it, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. And you just want to show people your work on Instagram, like, that's totally fine. But you need to define those things for yourself and decide where things are going and what you want things to be. Because even sometimes having the dream job, quote unquote, mm-hmm. Is not always that ideal. It's not as great as it seems like it would be sometimes. Or, you know, if you do want to turn your creative passion into a job, then, you know, you don't need to be making six figures. Like, all of these people are like, oh, I started my Etsy shop a year ago and I've got like millions of dollars now. It's like, that doesn't happen for most of us, and that's okay. So yeah, I think the whole question of platform is just so tricky, and it's always going to feel awkward to me mm-hmm. to promote myself online, because I think you really have to believe in your work to ask for people's limited attention and time and support. And sometimes I doubt that the work that I'm doing is worth asking for that attention from people. And sometimes I'm even like, is this something that I'm posting just to stay visible, just mm-hmm. because you're supposed to be posting? And then I feel bad almost, where it's like, well, I should be doing this because otherwise you're not connecting with people enough or whatever. But then I feel like I'm taking away people's time from something more worthwhile. I don't know. I have all these complicated feelings about it, especially with social media.
Yes. When it comes to social media, it just throws another wrench in everything. I know I published my first blog since July of 2017 last week. And when I say last week, I'm talking like around February 15th-ish. It might have been the 15th, actually, now that I say that. Because there just has not been the time and the attention and the ability to write anything that I thought was worthwhile all at the same time. I just haven't had that for the last 6-8 months or more at this point. I got hung up on the fact that my first blog after so long needed to be like amazing and good. Like, you took this much of a blogging break, it needs to like have amounted to something for you. And I realized that that was kind of hamstringing me, and there was no way I was ever going to be able to write a blog and kind of come back from that sort of unexplained break gracefully. And so I just like threw something ridiculous together about like, this is what I'm doing. This is what I wrote, the end. And now I think I can move past that and stop worrying about how it's going to affect my platform in one way, in one direction or another, good or bad, and just keep writing. And so kind of, I think sometimes platform gets in the way of us actually doing the creative work, and not even just from a time perspective, like, oh, if I spend time scheduling tweets, I don't have time to write. But from a, what will people think if I put this out there? Will they think that I'm just doing it for the attention, or will they not like it and stop following me? And is that enough of a reason to stop writing? I'm not always sure that it is.
Yeah, I really, really like that, where like you can, I think especially people who are not used to blogging maybe, or they have blogged sporadically, or they're thinking about starting a blog, that whole idea of what are people going to say and what are people going to think can hold you back in so many different ways. And it might even stop you from like sharing certain pieces of art on Instagram or just different things. And I think your example of coming back from a long blogging break is a good one too, because so many people feel about platform like, well, I've started, I have to keep going. I'm on the hamster wheel, and if I get off, I will lose everything I've built up until this point. Because that's kind of what everybody tells you, right? Like, if you don't keep posting and if you don't keep sharing, everyone will forget you exist, which is depressing. And nobody wants to, you know, think that all the time they've spent blogging or posting consistently on social media has been time wasted. But sometimes it's in the best interest of you and your work to take that step back. I mean, you had a baby. I don't think that anybody in their right mind would fault you for not blogging during most of the first year of that baby's life, because that's like a huge life upheaval that just happened. And if you didn't have anything to blog about, or if you didn't have time or didn't want to blog, then that's fine. And obviously it didn't make that big of a dent in your platform, because I saw all the comments on your blog post from people who were like, oh, hey, you're back. That's cool.
Yeah.
And it's not like anybody was like, well, I just want to let you know I'm not going to follow you anymore because you were gone for too long. And that's not acceptable, Abby.
Yeah. And I think so often too, we look at, I guess, the other people on the internet, and we've talked about this before, as, you know, content creators. And if they're not creating content at a pace that we're happy with, or in ways that we're happy with, like, we can just write them off. And in a way that that's true, like, if an online source isn't meeting your needs anymore, by all means, unfollow and like get the clutter out of the way so that you can follow something that does help you or that is interesting to you. But I think we often forget that the people behind that platform or standing on that platform are people.
Yeah, and I'm just going to throw in here the example of Alexandra Franzen. I don't know if you follow her at all, but she has a blog and she is a professional writer, so she makes her living. I think she does some ghostwriting for people. She does copywriting, and she hosts writing retreats in awesome places like Hawaii. And she sends out an email newsletter very sporadically. I mean, maybe she has an editorial calendar, but it seems sporadic to me as a follower.
And as someone who does content marketing for a living.
Yes, but I'm not like, and again, this is where you think that people pay so much attention to you. Like, I know that she doesn't send emails and write blog posts weekly like some people do, but I couldn't tell you like exactly how often she sends them, because nobody's paying as much attention to your stuff and your schedule as you are. So that's just something to think about. But she has not been on social media for years. She was just like, you know what, this was taking up too much of my time and I don't need it. And I'm just going to go away. And she writes novels and she writes memoirs, I think. I think she's written a memoir. Maybe I'm wrong. But I know she's written novels. Like, she writes books just for herself in addition to all this writing work that she does for her clients. And then she has these blog posts and newsletters that come up occasionally, and they're usually quite short. They don't follow the SEO rules. She's obviously not spending all this time promoting them, and she's still successful. And part of that, you could say, like, well, she got started before the market was so competitive. Mm-hmm. Or you could look at it and say, well, you know what? She does great work and she impacts a lot of people and they do the sharing for her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't need to spend all this time on social media. And so I always kind of look at her as somebody where I'm like, I wish I were brave enough to start doing that, because when I think about the people that I follow very regularly online, I am not following them because they share something daily or because they share something that is going to somehow make me wealthier or skinnier or some sort of like product or result. I follow them because I genuinely like their writing. Mm-hmm. And I would buy anything that they wrote because I genuinely liked it. And I would check in on their blogs, even if they only blog once a year. I would be happy for that one post, you know? So I think we just put too much pressure mm-hmm. on ourselves.
Yeah, no, that is so true. And you just brought to mind a blogger that I haven't thought of in a little while. Her name was Rachel, and she wrote at smallnotebook.org, I think, Small Notebook. And she has not posted literally in years because of, I'm guessing, just life circumstances. She doesn't blog anymore. But every now and again, I think about her blog, and I go back and I read parts of it because it's still up online. And so, I don't know, that's something I think that's impressive. Like, she still has a quote-unquote platform years and years later because she built cool stuff and people showed up and read it.
Yeah, and that's one that I'm going to check out now because I'm like, oh, there's probably lots of archives for me to go through, even if she's not blogging anymore.
Yes.
Like, I could still enjoy all of her past posts now, so I'm going to make a mental note to go and do that.
Yep. And we'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah, we will. I think there's something to be said for that. It's like the combination of two books that I think I've mentioned on the podcast in mini book clubs before because I've read them both in recent months, but Perennial Seller and Deep Work. And Deep Work is all about, like, don't worry about social media so much. Step away from it as much as you can and just focus on doing the work. And if you do the best work you can do, you will attract people to that. And then Perennial Seller was a little bit more marketing focused, but it had that same kind of message where it's like, if you want your work to live on and if you don't want it to be just a flash in the pan when everybody has such limited attention spans, you need to make sure that it's good.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's maybe just something to be said for, you know, have an online presence, but don't worry so much about it.
Yeah.
Spend more of your focus and more of your energy on doing the work. And then when you put it out there, just let it go. And what happens, happens. And if Facebook changes an algorithm, that's not your problem. That's okay, because you did the work.
Those are very wise words. So I think we chatted about this a little bit in our little diatribe that we just went on. But what are our biggest struggles surrounding platform and social media? Do you have any that you can like easily pinpoint?
I think my biggest one is just not getting sucked into all the things you're supposed to be doing, because working in the world of content marketing especially, I'm always seeing industry insider tips on, you know, using this platform or, you know, tweaking SEO for this, or this is how long your blog posts are supposed to be now. And sometimes I just need to step away mm-hmm. from that and be like, okay, it's all right for me to keep that in mind for my client work, but I do not need to apply it to myself and to my creative work. Yeah. And I don't need to be following all of these arbitrary rules that change every other day. And I don't need to compete with where other people are or where it seems like other people might be, because social media can be deceiving that way. I just need to, you know, focus on doing the work. And that's where I get the most stuck with social media and blogging and all of that stuff.
No, I can definitely agree with that. Getting sucked in is a big issue. I also tend to get stuck in a rut, if that makes sense at all, kind of doing the same thing that I've always mm-hmm. done, even when things are changing. So just because I, you know, for example, am putting out 2 posts a week every week on my blog and sharing it to all the platforms the same way I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years, it may not be working for me anymore. And maybe I'm spending all that time in ways that I shouldn't be. And so I think we can also figure out a system that works for us, but if we never ever revisit it, we can be doing just as much harm as maybe if we weren't doing anything at all.
especially like you said, with how often you post on your blog, I feel like expectations for that have changed a lot. There was a time where people were posting every day, and I cannot even imagine. Yeah. Like, that makes me want to cry, like, on their behalf. I'm like, no.
And then I also think I can get stuck in the kind of like the hamster wheel. I liked that term you used earlier, of producing more, more, more instead of better. And that can be a tough one for me, too. I tend to be fairly... I'm going to use the word legalistic, but like, if I say I'm going to post on Tuesdays and Thursdays, then if, you know, Monday at 9:30 PM rolls around and I still don't have a post for Tuesday, I'll try to figure out something to whip together really quick, but it won't necessarily be what I needed to work on or what needed to be published. Like, if you're just publishing for the sake of publishing, maybe that's not the rut you want to be in either.
Yeah. It's easy to focus on just putting something out there rather than, do I have anything to say or do I have any work that's ready to be shared at this time? And that's, there's like a discernment. That's the word I'm looking for. There's a discernment there that I think a lot of us have lost because we are, you know, stuck on always producing some sort of content. Like you said, we're on the hamster wheel and maybe it would be better. And I think in some ways, in certain industries anyway, people are starting to move this direction where they think a little bit more about connecting with people and serving the work rather than just posting to be consistent or posting to meet a schedule. So I hope that's a trend that continues. Maybe it's something that I'm just seeing because those are the people I seek out because I need to see more of that in my own online life. So I put those people front and center and stop following people who make me feel bad.
That's smart. So smart. Well, and I think there is a season for each individual too, for if you need to get back in the discipline of producing things and back in the discipline of, you know, creating and carving out that time for yourself, then maybe you do need to be on a somewhat strict schedule. And even if it's not good, you're still showing up. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to publish it and put it out there as examples of your best work. Like, you know, write the 500 words and leave it in your desktop on your computer and not, like, throw it out to the world. If that helps you be able to create more or more often, then, like, take some of that pressure away from publishing it or throwing it out to your platform. Take that off your shoulders, and it might get a little easier.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good reminder. So we've been talking about all of the many downsides and complexities of platform, but there are probably a handful of upsides to focusing on marketing. So do you see any good coming out of all of this?
Yeah, I think if we're writing our stories and we're sharing them with other people, but they're not going anywhere and no one is benefiting from them, that can be sad. And so the upside of having a platform or having created communities where people can learn from you and vice versa, it really helps, I think, allow you to know that your creative work is making a difference. And I think for some creative people that makes all the difference for them as to whether or not they'll show up again the next day.
Yes, very true. And I was thinking something similar, actually, where, like, even with this podcast, like, we really enjoy talking to each other, but I think we're always a little bit surprised. I mean, we're in the grand scheme of things. This is a very small podcast, but we are still surprised and impressed and grateful for the people who do listen to it. And there's a pretty consistent number who download every episode, and that's still kind of astonishing to me and also makes it more worthwhile. It makes it more worth doing this because we know that there are people out there who are listening and who must be gaining something from what we're saying because otherwise they wouldn't keep tuning in. And that was probably the result of the tiny little platforms we both had built with our blogs before we launched this podcast. And so just being able to see those little beacons of, like, oh, we are connecting with people and we are saying things that make a difference to somebody else. And maybe we should just keep showing up and doing mm-hmm. that, even if it is a small platform and a small group of people. That doesn't mean that it doesn't matter. So that can be really encouraging to see.
Yeah, I like that distinction too, that you're still making a difference, and it doesn't have to be measured in numbers. And that is something that I always have to remember.
It doesn't have to be measured in numbers or money, which is also a number. That's another thing that's easy to get caught up with in this online platform building. So
do you have any practical tips or strategies that you have used and that have worked for you that helped you build a platform or at least not hate building a platform as much?
I only focus on platforms that I enjoy being on. Mm-hmm. So I think this has become more popular advice in recent years, but going back even 5 years, I think the general idea was you need to have a presence on every platform, which was just exhausting mm-hmm. to keep up with. And now I think there are more people who say, don't try to do everything and be everywhere. Just be where you enjoy being or where your followers hang mm-hmm. out. And for me, this is like, I spent years not being on Instagram because I like Twitter more. And I feel like the vibe of Twitter has started changing in the last even year or two. Mm-hmm. So I still pop in there and I still have followers there, but I set Twitter more on autopilot and just interact with a few people here and there. And I am showing up more on Instagram now because now I'm finding it's a more enjoyable place to be. And before, for me, it never was. And now I think people on Instagram are being a little bit more real and a little bit less polished, mm-hmm. which I like better. So being able to adapt and being able to see which platforms are going to serve you well and not drive you nuts, I think is very helpful.
Yes, the not drive you nuts part is important, very important. Mm-hmm. And I think you do this really well, both in blogging and on social media, but you take breaks when you need them. And you've always advocated that taking blogging breaks will not kill your blog.
Yes, and you are proof of that now. Like, you have seen, like, you took a very long blogging break, and it was fine.
Yep.
You know, it might have been hard to jump back in, but all of your people still love mm-hmm. you, and it's all good.
Yeah. So I guess my advice is to find the social media tools that work for you as well, and try to make it as few as possible that do kind of as much as possible. And whether or not mm-hmm. you like using Hootsuite to publish to everything but Instagram, although I think they do Instagram now. I'm a little out of the loop.
I think
Instagram opened up its API a couple of weeks ago and are now letting more platforms publish directly to Instagram as opposed to having to like send reminders.
Interesting.
I'll have to look that up and maybe put something about it in the show notes. I'm talking from an uneducated place at the moment. but yes, my advice is find the tools that work for you. So whether it is Hootsuite or Buffer or Later.com for Instagram, like find something that helps you do social media a little bit more on autopilot so that you can still be sharing your stuff, but that it's not consuming your life. I think that is really important to be able to schedule out a few things and walk away and let your social media tools kind of do a little bit of the work for you so that you're not spending as much of your creative energy not doing creative work.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I will say that this isn't one that would be good for Twitter, but if you are somebody who is on, or no, it is good for Twitter. It's not good for Instagram. There we go. But if you're somebody who's on Twitter especially, sometimes I think even on Facebook this could be helpful, but I don't have a professional Facebook presence, so I don't know for sure. And on Pinterest, in some cases, finding a tool that will recycle past updates for you. So it used to be that only expensive tools had mm-hmm. the corner on this market, but now there are a lot of free options or low-cost options that have opened up. So RecurPost, I know, has a free plan for Twitter, and I think SmarterQ is another option that is cheaper, certainly, than alternatives. And Board Booster for Pinterest does looping. I'm not sure how much it costs anymore because I haven't used it in a while, but just finding things that will sort of recycle those past posts for you. Even if you've got like a big blog archive or something, you can write up a bunch of different updates and they will always be cycling through. So that's kind of how I've been able to back away from Twitter, but still continue, you know, slowly building that platform and engaging with people there, is because I'm still pushing out those recycled content updates, and that saves a lot of time but still leads new people to my work.
And that would fall under my tip for batching tasks. We've talked about it on the podcast before, but find a bunch of things that you can do together that kind of build on each other. So whether that's writing tweets for 10 posts at a time or writing 10 Instagram posts at a time so that you can just post them all and not have to worry about what am I going to post on Instagram today. It really helps you get into that groove and kind of do things more quickly so that you can get back to making good work. And that helps a lot.
You had a tip on here that I really, really like, which is find people who are doing social media and doing platform building well and learn from them. And I think that's something that I've sort of unconsciously started trying to do in the last couple of months, where I look at, okay, who are the people I admire online? They're not everywhere all the time. They're not posting 70 million times a day. Like, how can I do more of what they are doing?
Or even getting to the heart of, like, why do I like what they're doing? Does it feel authentic to me? Or does it, you know, resonate with some message that I really need to hear right now? And kind of figuring out why you connect with something will help you connect with people in that same fashion.
An important distinction to make, aside from, like, don't necessarily just copy what somebody is doing in the hopes that you will immediately gain a million followers or something, but understanding the heart behind their strategy and knowing why people are attracted to them, especially if you've got similar audiences, I think that could be really helpful. So good advice. Very good.
Cool. Well, I think that is all the tips we have for people to make platform building less icky and more enjoyable. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. Platform's just a tricky thing, and it's probably going to stay tricky for as long as the internet is around. So, you know what? Good luck to all of us, and try not to get sucked in.
That is good advice. So what kind of books have you allowed yourself to get sucked into lately?
So my latest read is called Heating and Cooling, 52 Micro Memoirs by Beth Ann Fennelly. And this was a really cute little book. Cute isn't even the right word for it. Like, the book itself is cute because it is small, but the writing is outstanding. Mm-hmm. So Beth Ann Fennelly is one of those writers that you can tell is just a poet at heart. And so pretty much everything she writes is like a mashup of poetry and just normal writing. Mm-hmm. And so the words are just gorgeous. And when the title says micro memoirs, they are really like a couple of them are just like two or three sentences. And then there are others that are, I think the longest ones are maybe 5 pages.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very easy book to read with little kids around. Or if you've got like a really demanding day job and you only get a couple minutes here and there to read, very, very easy to be like, I'm going to read one essay, and you can read it in literally less than 2 minutes. It's fantastic. The writing was funny. She covered so many different spectrums. And then even the way that these essays were arranged were just very artfully done. Like, some essays in the middle of the book would refer back to an essay towards the beginning of the book.
Nice.
And I just really appreciated everything about it. It was like memoir meets poetry, and made me laugh, made me cry. Highly, highly recommend.
Oh, well, that is definitely a glowing recommendation. And for someone who I love, Beth Ann Fennelly, I think you and Callie introduced me to her in our very first season of Chasing Creative. So like episode 5, maybe, I don't know. Her memoir, not memoir even, Great with Child, Letters to a Young Mother. I know we've talked about it here on the podcast before, but it's literally letters that she wrote to another woman who is expecting a baby. And the letters are poetic in and of themselves. So I imagine if she's setting out to intentionally write something that people are going to read, it's even more magical.
Yeah, it was just so funny. And like, this book was like, if you are timid about getting into poetry or maybe not sure where to start with poetry, I would start with something like this, because they are technically essays. There is a narrative thread that you can follow, even in the shortest of the essays, but they are really, really entertaining, and they have that poetic vibe to them, so that going and reading full-blown poetry might not feel like such a daunting task, I guess, once you finish reading this book. It was just so phenomenal. It's something that I think I'll probably just dive in and out of here and there, just to be like, oh yeah, that's what really excellent writing looks like. That's right. Good reminder. Yeah.
That's always nice to have a go-to for good, excellent writing that kind of inspires you to hit the keyboard yourself.
And whenever anything is easy to read while you are standing at the stove and your children are in the next room over and you can actually like easily dive in and out of it, that is always a win in my book right now. Yes. So
good, good. Well, I have not been reading anything new lately, so I'm going to add that one to my list. I'll probably go add it to my cart, actually, honestly, right now. And we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag Chasing Creative on Twitter and Instagram.
If you'd like to help us bring this podcast to life each week, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/chasingcreative.
And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.